Hello, everybody. This is the Gingerbread Man, and I would like to welcome you to my home. I'm glad you're here. Thanks for showing up. Let's get right into it. Tonight, I want to tell a story, and I'm going to try to tell it well, because it shouldn't be a tragedy. And in all reality, you know, all the struggles and hardships that I have been through has put me where I am. And if I had the choice to do things differently or to go back in time, you know, I never would. One of my first jobs that I had when I was about 19 years old, I worked at a nursing home as a food aide. And this nursing home was like sort of like semi-hospice. So roughly two-thirds of the residents there were expected to pass, you know, within a year or even a couple weeks sometimes, you know. Kind of sad to think about it, dying in a facility, you know, but that's not the point of bringing that up. When I was in my second semester of college, I was doing social work. And as a social worker, one of my projects was that I had to interview somebody about death. And so me, with my very, I don't know what you'd call it, sort of ballsy, you know, I went up to a man who had, I don't remember what he had. It was like some really bad, like flesh-eating disease that you can't get rid of. And he was like in his 80s. And me and him talked all the time because I always spent time and energy to give attention to any and everybody that I was working there. It was one of my first karmic practices to see that. So here I am asking this man about death. And one of my questions was, if you had the choice right now to go back to being 20 years old, would you do it? And the man looked at me and he said, hell no. He's like, all of that tension and, you know, lack of self-control. He's like, with as ill as my body is right now, and I'm paraphrasing here, this is not a quotation, but he's like, with all of the illness in my body right now, I still would rather be the me I am right now than change it to something different. So remember all of those struggles and even the traumas that come back up, you know, those made you who you are. And as Ram Dass said, suffering is grace. So tonight, I want to tell you the story of how I got custody of my son. And I guess we'll go all the way to the beginning-ish. So I met my son's mother at a party, and I was a very insecure little man, and I was abusing a lot of substances, and it wasn't a very good house. You know, this house was so filthy and it smelled like cat shit and dog shit. At some point, one of the tenants literally knocked down a wall in the apartment, which is just something I've never heard of. A friend of mine was actually sleeping in a closet, you know, and so that's where I am. I'm in like, you know, and lots of partying going on. And I happened to end up one of the last people awake. Probably like 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning. And me and this girl were playing cards with a good friend of mine. And he had been hitting on her most of the night, and she had been basically sitting on his lap. And so I had no expectations or any intentions, you know, but I was very out of my mind. So we're playing games, and, you know, eventually somehow she ends up cozying up to me somehow, which irritated Tom, not gonna say his name, which irritated T, and he left. And so then it was just us two is the only two people who are awake in this trap house. And I was getting rather sick because I had been doing a lot of opiates. I think it was codeine. Somebody had like a bag of like 200 codeine. And so I had been smoking and probably did at least 20 or 30 codeine pills. And so at this point in the night, I was very sick and very itchy. And I remember her getting me water. And even though she seemed like she was kind of loose, not trying to be judgmental, you know, she was very kind and compassionate with me. And that's what really caught me. And we ended up snuggling on the couch, you know, like not really snuggling, but just sleeping, you know, and nothing happened. And I didn't try any moves, and I didn't want it. I was very happy just in that space for that little bit of time. And so the next morning, I left. I didn't have a car, so I'm walking up to the bus, and she gives me her number. And I just remember just feeling so intoxicated, even though I was honestly in withdrawal. And people, a significant other or something that a person that you admire has the capacity to twist your chemicals in your brain and your hormones. And one of the strongest highs on the planet is the attachments we form with other people when we desire them. And so I think my phone was dead, and I got home and I texted her and I didn't hear back from her. And then like the next morning she asked if she can come over, and I was like, hell fucking yeah. And from that day, I think she was crashing at somebody's house, and I'm pretty sure she was sleeping with that guy. Because I came to pick her up one time, and like she literally kissed the dude on her front step, and I'm an idiot, and I'm just completely head over heels, and so I just ignored it. But I convinced her within like a week or two to move in with me and my dad, which is insane. So I was backdrop a little bit. At this point in my life, it was my first instance of being raped by heroin. And this happened to be the choice of her. And it worked out really well because, you know, like we both liked it, and that was something that we could get into. But I stopped using very early because I felt the drug putting a distance between me and her. And I preferred the love and the intoxication that she could give me. So I dropped it, but she didn't. And so a couple months down the road, me and her were making side money. I didn't have a job, but we were making good money. And we were a good team, you know, but she kept leaving in the middle of the night. And then like, it would just fuck up my head, man, because I knew something was going on. And she had told me that she had stopped using. And so like a month of fighting, and I remember sitting in on the closet floor holding her, and she tells me that she'd still been using. And, you know, it was just so foul. And in a way, that was almost another lie to distance herself from the actual truth, because there was a lot of things she did not tell me. So about a month after that, she starts missing her period, and she starts getting really sick. And we get a pregnancy test, and it's obvious that she's pregnant. And I think this almost coded her use for a while, because at this point, she would have been about 2 or 3 months pregnant. And she'd been using up until 3 weeks before that. And so a lot of the sickness that she had probably pawned off as use could have been physical because of her pregnancy. Anywho, so I tell my dad finally, and it was one of the scariest moments of my life. It took me a week to get the courage to go up to him, and because I'm a child still, you know, not, I don't even think I was 19, I was probably 18, you know, and she told me that she was 20, but we'll get more into that. So I tell my father, I'm like, Dad, you know, she's pregnant. I'm going to be a dad. You're going to be a grandpa. And surprisingly, he was very happy and just over the moon, you know, and he had the options talk. He's like, have you considered all your options? Have you considered abortion, adoption? You know, you're young. How are you going to play this? These things you have to talk about. But that was that. And then like 2 or 3 days later, he comes up to me in the apartment and he tells me that he's moving in with his girlfriend, and that I could have the apartment if I wanted to, which is kind of hilarious if you consider the fact that I was a completely inept college student who was recently clean and had never had a job before. You know, you can have this apartment, this 2-bedroom apartment for $1,200 a month. So that wasn't an option. And so me and her, we started packing and getting ready. And I devised a plan for us to move into my buddy's house and his mother's house, honestly, And I had it all set up and we were packing. And then one really rough afternoon, you know, we're just fighting and she completely breaks down. And I remember I'm laying down with her and I'm like, what's going on? You know, like, I love you. You can tell me anything. You know, what's going on? There's something that I'm not understanding here because this is so confusing. And she looked at me and she goes, I've been lying to you. And so my stomach dropped. I couldn't think of what it was. And first thing I thought was that she was going to say that she'd been cheating on me because I was so insecure. But she goes, my name's not Eden. My name is S. And I was just like, fuck, a name? Really? And she goes, also, I'm not 20. You know, I'm 16. Fuck. Okay. And there's more. At this point, I'm just holding it together for her, but I'm spiraling. I'm spiraling. And so I go, what? What's going on? I have a warrant for my arrest for Grand Theft Auto. Fuck me. She never wanted to leave the house. She was always terrified. Like, I was speechless, but I was still completely devoted to her. But I was also devoted to our future. And so I knew that the only thing that we could realistically do was to get her to figure this shit out. So I got her to call her grandmother. And that day, that fucking day, her grandma and her mom drove down from northern Colorado and picked her up and took her up there. And a week later, she was in kid jail. And she spent 2 months of her pregnancy in kid jail. She called me almost every day. But I was just such a stupid, idiot child. And I couldn't sense what was coming or her lack of maturity. And so about a month and a half into her time, she calls me and she tells me that she does not think that I'm strong enough for her. She tells me that she does not trust me to take care of her and my son. And she dropped me like a brick. And I fell hard. I fell very hard. At this point, I was a full-time college student. You know, I got that job at the nursing home within a week of moving into my friend's house. So I was working at this point. But yeah, wow. So when she's about 5 or 6 months pregnant, her grandma calls me and tells me how much of a piece of shit I am. And I don't hear from them for a very long time. And I get a new job at Walmart, stocking overnight. So I'm stocking overnight from 10 o'clock at night until about 7 o'clock in the morning. And then I'll go home and I would sleep for like 2 hours. And I'd get up and I'd drive down to the community college and I'd do my first class. And then I'd have an hour break where I'd like pass out in a chair and I'd have another class. And then I'd go home and sleep for another hour or two, and then I'd go to work. And I was so despondently low because I was so lost. I had this ideal of a family that I wanted to bring into the world, and yet I had absolutely no ability or agency to affect my life. So about a month before my son is born, I get a call from her, and she offers for me to go to a doctor's visit that she's having. And this was at the point where you start to have bi-weekly visits, so it's 2 visits a week, and she was letting me come to one of them. And I hadn't been allowed to be part of any of it at this point. And so I hopped on it immediately. But I was tired. The doctor's appointment was at 8 o'clock. I got off work at 7, so I'd ask to leave early, and then I'd haul ass, very sleep deprived, for 120-ish miles, for a 30-minute doctor's visit, and then I would turn around and drive back, and then I would go to school with no sleep. I would do a complete all-nighter on those days. And then after school, I'd go back to work again. And I'd get home and just fall like a sack of potatoes. But I did it. And then my son was born. I remember that day clearly. She calls me on a day off at 9 o'clock in the morning about, I think. And she says, I'm going into labor. You should head up here. But no hurry. But of course, I was just ecstatic. And so, you know, I probably drove 100 miles per hour the entire way up there. And I got there and I was ready for fireworks. And she goes, you know, we're just starting. I'm just getting a room. You know, we probably got 18, 24 hours left. And I was like, okay. But here's the kicker. She had a boyfriend in her room that I had no idea about kicking it in the delivery room. When I walked in, and I had no idea he existed. And I was still holding on to this ideal of hope that I could get her back and prove to her that I was worth it. And in that moment, all my powerlessness fell even further into powerlessness. But this young man, we were both boys, but he ended up being a potent figure in my history and in that day. We ended up going and smoking pot out in the parking lot, you know, and just talking. And we quickly became friends-ish in that very sticky and tricky situation. And I'm so grateful to this dude because he was the only reason I believe that I was allowed to be in the delivery room when my son was born. She had no intentions of letting me do it. She was just going to call me when he was born. And he talked her into it and made her understand why I needed to be there as a father. And I was not only there, I physically helped. There was one nurse on one leg and I was on the other leg. I was a foot and a half away from the inception of a human life. And I'm a very queasy person. I'm not good with blood and gore. Yet somehow, some way, it didn't bother me even a little bit. I knew how precious a gift that was coming, wrapped in shit and blood, like we all come into this world. I remember holding him. I have pictures of holding him. I have a picture on my wall in my house that's from that day. And he was beautiful. And immediately I wanted to know when the first time I could visit him was. And I was there that week or two after he was born to see him. And every week from the time he was born, I drove up there with all of my hellish schedule to go spend an hour with my son under strict supervision in a living room in a house with a family that I felt very uncomfortable with. But I cannot tell you how amazing each and every one of those moments were and how excited I was when I was driving up to go see my boy. About 4 or 5 months old, my son, and she breaks up with dude and starts doing her thing. And I think she started using again at this time period. And I started texting her and she was always just so cold. And I just kept being sweet and caring and available. And eventually she finally let it happen. And I went up to go see my son one visit. And it wasn't like I was being supervised. It's like me and my son's mother were with my boy. And I saw a little glimpse of light, a possibility again. And probably about a month after us starting to talk and be more compassionate with each other again, it solidified, and we slept together. And one of the visits, I would go visit my son, and instead of just for an hour, I would go up and spend the night. And so I would go and I'd get to their house, and then it'd be just me, my son, and his mother for until noon the next day, and then I would drive back down and go do my shit. And so one night I'm just exhausted and I'm dreading driving back. I can't even stomach the idea of actually walking into work that night at 10 o'clock, especially after being with my family all day. And she just goes, "Well, why don't you just move up here?" And I was immediately no second guessing. I was just like, yes. I called my boss within 5 minutes of that conversation and quit Walmart. And the next day went down, started gathering shit up and brought it up into this little tiny house that her family owns that we were living in. It was heated by a boiler, you know. And we were together for about 3 weeks to a month before it all fell apart again. And I was hiding things from her. I was using things that I shouldn't have, which she was as well. But we were lying to each other. That's the important part. But she could sense it, and she called me on it. And it got really violent one night, and she threw a picture at me. And then her grandmother just picked her up and took my son, and then they left. And I didn't see my kid for 4 months. They turned the power and the water off on the house because I had nowhere to go, so I was just sleeping there. They turned the power and the water off like 3 days afterwards, and so I found out when I tried to flush the shit down the toilet. And I just started looking, and I got on, I don't remember who or how, but I got coordinated with this group of college kids that was living in Greeley, whereas my son's mother's family lived in Loveland. And so I got in there. I was working a construction job with one of her family's, her grandpa's construction crew, and got up there and I started getting more jobs. I got hired on at Cracker Barrel. I got hired on at Jimmy John's. I got hired on at a local donut shop. I quit construction. I was working like 65 hours a week, but I was making good money. And I moved out of the college kid's house and I moved into my own house. I got a one bedroom apartment I was very proud of, but I had no furniture. So it was literally just a bedroom and a kitchen and an empty living room, but it was mine. So now my son is approximately a year and 2 or 3 months. We've been through a rocky roller coaster of human shit. And I haven't seen my boy in a long time again at this point. I think it was another stretch where she had kept him away from me for like 2 months. She was threatening to have me do piss tests. And I even went and did a piss test and gave it to her to prove that, you know, I even stopped smoking pot, which is bizarre for me. Yeah. And, you know, I'm going through all these things, and I had started court the first week of his life. So I had court documents and pressure in motion, but nothing had happened yet. We hadn't even had our initial conference yet. And she calls me up out of the blue. I think I had her in my phone as fucking cunt. So it was very obvious I knew who it was. And I know, I'm so silly. Such a little child. So she calls me and she says, "It's my birthday this weekend. I want to go down to Colorado Springs. And I would like you to drive us. And you can go and bring Odin to go see your dad." And so I'm like, "Oh, really? Yes." You know, my son had, my father had been there in the delivery room, but my dad had never held him before, really, or spent time with him like that. And I just immediately, yes, we're doing it now. And so I picked her up that night, and we went down, and she was in a very unhealthy stage of her life at this point, I realize in hindsight. And I think she knew, if not consciously, but subconsciously, that I did have the strength of character, even though she decided to tell me that I did not, to take care of my boy. So I think this was all premeditated. Keep in mind, I'd never had an actual overnight with my son before where it was just me and him, you know, without somebody else. And it was pretty great. It was a good night. I felt like a dad. And then She calls me the next morning and she says, I don't want to go back. And it was just so sudden. And for some reason, I was still trying to protect her. And in a way, all of our conversations about it, I was almost trying to talk her out of it because I didn't want to be in the position where I took him from her. Because her whole family had been trying to say that that was my intentions the entire time. And I didn't want that. I never wanted full custody. I'm willing and responsible enough to take care of my son and be the provider. But I don't think it's healthy for a solo parent. And I never wanted this. People always look at me when I say that I'm a single dad with full custody. And they're like, congratulations. But it sickens me that he doesn't see her and that she won't even call him. So I told her, you know, I'm like, if you make this decision, I will take care of him. But I'm going to have to make a lot of changes and I'm going to have to turn my life upside down. I had 3 jobs in an apartment up in Northern Colorado. I was supposed to be at work the next day. You know, I was like, if you do this, I'm going to drop everything up there. I'm going to quit everything. You know, I need my family's help for this and I'm going to move him to Colorado Springs and we will live here with my family. And she agreed. It's just so shocking. But she didn't really agree. She walked away. So I had a panic attack for 2 weeks. So I had no idea what I was doing. It was overwhelming. And my son had a massive regression because of the change and not being around people that he's used to. His life switched from one house to another overnight. And he was only 1.5 years. And I did it. We got to court. The initial conference, the first day of court, was probably 3 weeks after she left him with me. And we were both there. She showed up somehow. And she was trying and working towards getting rid of her rights. It took about 4 or 5 different court days where I had to drive up to Northern Colorado because all of the custody stuff was in a separate city from where we were living at this point. And it took about 5 or 6 months. And she didn't show up for one of her court dates, or she did show up, but she was like 45 minutes late. And the judge, me and the judge were literally talking about him giving me full unstipulated orders. And then she just walked in the door. She was probably 65 pounds, the color gray of a penguin. Yeah, she looks so sick. And she straight up told the judge, you know, I'm not fit to take care of him right now. And we all signed papers. And I have what's called discretion, which means that she's physically incapable of ever taking me to court unless she can prove that I'm an unfit father. Nobody has that. A lot of people in these back and forth custody agreements will go to court once a year for 10 years until they finally get tired of it and quit. And she made it so that she could never try again. Well, I was going to try to spin this a little differently, but it still came out kind of dark. I hope you can feel like you know me a little bit better and see where I'm coming from. And why I'm so passionate about parenting, and why my spirituality is based around love. You know, everything I did at each step of the way was completely from a conditioned love because I was attached to certain things. But that love that I was giving, that love that she sensed in me, so that even though she was unsure of her life, she still had enough trust in me and she didn't know it. Or maybe she did. You know. Even telling it, it's heavy just to think back because it was a really hard time. But now, my son and I have a 2-bedroom apartment. We have a home. My son is beautiful. He's smart and courageous He's more brave than I will ever be. He's so much stronger than I am. I've been a single father with full custody for 5.5 years now. I've done it with an immense amount of help from my family, from government assistance like CCAP, which helps pay for childcare. I'm grateful for all the institutions and all the therapists that have all tried to help and give attention to make our family better. It's beautiful. I'm sitting here looking back with a really large smile on my face. Okay, guys, that's enough of my dribble. I know there might not have been a theme or an idea, but I love you. Please take care of yourself. You're special, and I'm glad you're here. I don't think I'm going to have Odin talk this week because I don't know how I would want to talk about this and tie it together. So it might just be a little random. But we'll have him back next week. Thank you so much for being here. Be love.